What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome to another pay-per-view point edition of the Smarkout Moment Smack Talk podcast. I am your host, as always, Tony Mango, and joining me, as always, are Callum Wiggins.
Hey.
And Robert DeFelice.
Hello.
And we are talking about NXT TakeOver New York, which just ended a couple minutes ago or so, and we are going to give you our first impressions of the event. Because obviously we haven't had enough time to just go back and watch this a second time because we're recording it right afterward. And everything's real fresh in our minds right now. And we're just going to kind of break it down, hits and misses, top to bottom, start to finish, all the kind of stuff that we have in mind. So we invite you to do the same in the comments below and all the other kind of jazz that we usually do. So we're going to start things off with the pre-show here. Am I the only one that watched the pre-show?
I watched the pre-show.
I saw it, and I had it on mute.
To be fair, the pre-show was predominantly just recap video packages, the panel gave their analysis, you know, that kind of a thing. But there was one thing that they added onto this that wasn't really advertised all that much ahead of time, which was the WWE 2K19 Million Dollar Challenge, which was Corey Graves and Xavier Woods hosting as AJ Styles played WWE 2K19 against the Golden Voice, Stefan T. Benson.
That's right.
And this guy's apparently like a manager or something on like the indie circuit. I looked up his Twitter account. He's got a decent amount of followers. It makes sense because this guy could kind of cut a promo.
Is that why he was just overly animated?
I think so. I think that I don't know how he got into this position or, you know, if this was all just like a setup or, you know, whatever the case may be. I doubt it, because if they're giving away money, then, you know, it's not something that you can really just sort of play favorites to and stuff. But maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. And this dude seemed to be animated enough that I could honestly see them wanting to work with him at some point in the future.
I agree. He's from the area, too. He's a Philadelphia guy. I'm looking him up now.
Huh. That explains a little bit of why the New York crowd hated him. Not just because of the fact that he was just some rando, you know, that kind of thing. Funny enough, the whole thing is he's Brock Lesnar and AJ Styles is AJ Styles. And it's a complete squash match with a bunch of German suplexes and an F5. And it lasts something like 2.5 minutes or whatever, which is oddly fitting for a Brock Lesnar match, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to keep this real quick. I hated the way this guy played. The whole thing annoyed me. It really made it seem like a setup, because it seemed like AJ didn't put up much of a...
He didn't, like, hit any of the buttons for, like,
yeah,
the
like,
first half or something.
Any kind of effort. So, whatever. If he gets a job with them, great. I'm looking him up now. A lot of actual wrestlers follow him, so maybe there is something going on here. Maybe he gets a spot in 2K20 in some regard. But yeah, good for him.
It's one of those extra little things. And you know what? I'm more into that than if they would have just had another video package. So why the fuck not, you know?
I had it on mute because I wasn't really paying much attention to it. But it was just, I found the whole thing incredibly cringeworthy.
It was. I agree with that.
I don't disagree.
It went on far too long. There was Corey Graves and Xavier Woods were out there for, it felt like, 10 minutes trying to introduce the entire thing in front of a crowd, a really sparse crowd of people that were still filing into the building.
Because it was taped. I was, for reference, Jordan Chaffiot was at the show and I was asking her about it and she's like, what are you talking about? They're doing matches right now. And I was like, okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
they needed to do their taping thing.
Yeah, but it just felt like so... Yeah, I can deal with a certain level of cringe, but it's just like, and the guy in this stupid outfit that he was wearing, and it's just like, it's entirely gold. It's like, yeah, you're immediately a heel to me, and I don't want you to win any money out of this. So,
but he was a heel though. Like, he knew it, so he played it up.
And I appreciate that side of things. It's just a case of like, this guy's supposed to be like a fan trying to win money
exactly,
out of thing, and you
exactly.
And you don't want to see, and you don't, and my only impression out of that was like, wow, I really don't want you to see you win any money, and I want you to go away almost actually getting beaten up by AJ Styles for real, as opposed to just in the game.
And then on the video game side of things, it was just so cheesy. He did the same. It's like when you're playing Mortal Kombat with your friend and they literally just do the one move over and over.
I mean, he was playing Brock Lesnar. He was playing Brock Lesnar.
But, like, I don't care. Like you said, it's supposed to be a fan playing a game. It just didn't come off as authentic. And now knowing that he's an actual, like, worker, it calls it into question even more.
Yeah. I'm just kind of surprised that it worked out the way that it did. And it's very suspicious, but at the same time, fuck it. I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, that didn't take $1 million away from me. I laughed at some of the stuff that had gone on with it. And if the guy is more comfortable on the mic than half the fucking roster, then hey, give him a goddamn job or something, you know, whatever. So I don't know. Maybe the golden voice, Stefan T. Benson, pops up on NXT in the future, some kind of contract. I don't know. We'll see. The NXT Tag Team Championship match was the first match on the actual card itself after the kickoff. And the War Raiders retained the titles over Aleister Black and Ricochet in something that we all kind of saw coming a mile away. But at the same time, something else that we all kind of assumed, knowing now that, like, tag team matches on TakeOver tend to be awesome, this was a fucking amazing match. This is already on my list for a potential match of the year candidate. I loved it from start to finish. I have obviously little notes here and there and stuff, but yeah, this was fucking great.
This was really, really good. I enjoyed the way that they built to actually fighting, because they are all baby faces and they told that story as quickly as they could. So I enjoyed it all the way through. And proper ending, proper team one, all that stuff.
I mean, this match was an absolute phenomenon of an opener. Crowd was super hot for everything. I need to see more matches between Aleister Black and Ray Rowe. They just worked so well together in the opening and then throughout with just the strike combinations. Hanson is obviously a freak of nature in terms of his ability to be, like, huge and powerful, but also do a lot of acrobatic stuff, and he paired up well with Ricochet. Yeah, and the whole thing just flowed brilliantly. It was just like you had some sort of combination work, but then you also had just high spots and lots of high impact strikes, tag team maneuvers. It was a perfect opening match.
So a couple little things that I had written down that was like specifics and stuff. War Raiders had an interesting entrance. They had like the beating the drum and everything like that. So that's cool that they're kind of keeping that going forward. Beginning of the match, I think it was Rob that just mentioned this, Rowe and Black stopping when they're about to hit each other and they're doing that little kind of like out of respect sort of thing. That was pretty cool. I wrote down a note of, what is this, takeover respect? I forgot I wrote that down. I cracked myself up. Hanson charging in the corner a bunch of times, just going back and forth. That was fun. I think he did it like, I don't know, 6 times a piece or something like that, it felt like. He just kept going and going and going.
I love the fact that Ricochet kept turning around in the corner while he was doing it as well. So he's just like constantly just falling. Sometimes he was facing the turnbuckle. Sometimes he was facing away from the turnbuckle. Just like just struggling to get in any sort of position because of it.
Yeah, it's like he was bouncing them into the opposite direction back and forth and stuff. And you can always tell like when people like Ricochet and these kind of guys and stuff, when they're doing stuff like that, you could tell that they're doing it because they're having fun. And they know how to, like, perform as opposed to just being, you know, stuntmen. So that's fun. Ricochet did with a fallaway slam on Hanson. How about that?
I liked it because I think Ricochet to get a move like that every now and again is important because you know he's going to be pushed to the moon at some point. And he needs to show that dominance. Go ahead.
I mean, that's the equivalent of, like, Hanson doing the backspring elbow. It's like, it's not really something that you typically associate with Ricochet being able to have that immense power behind him, as well as like all the acrobatic stuff. So it's like, Hanson is a big guy that can do springy moves, and Ricochet is a springy guy that can do power moves.
Have you ever seen a man, and I've seen it a lot with Dijak and Harper, but with the girth of Ray Rowe, just like doing that senton dive to the outside. amazing.
Okay, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head, and it would be it's quite a risk to do that sort of thing with a guy of his size, because the impact that he's landing is frankly ridiculous, but he seems to manage it well.
I mean, Hansen doing the cannonball off the top rope, and the way that they do that kind of stuff back and forth is surprising as hell for War Raiders. Like, they shouldn't be as good as they are, especially since, now I'll backtrack to what I had thought originally when War Raiders came on. I wasn't all that impressed when they first came into NXT. I was kind of like, those guys aren't really doing it for me. Until they started just actually being on, like, the takeovers and stuff, and I started to see more of their actual, like, their potential. And these past couple of times that they've been out there, they've put on a hell of a match, and it just makes me, like, so sad, because I look at this and it's like, it's so sad by being so happy, I should say. Takeover is a spot for a guaranteed great tag team match every single time. And you look at the main roster and you're like, you've got double the chances just in terms of roster, and way more than double the chances in terms of, like, pay-per-view events and stuff. And it tends to be like, maybe we get like two good matches a year. You know, it's really a shame because there's so many good tag teams, and these guys are going to be like, good.
It comes down to the oversaturation on the main roster and the way that NXT is allowed to tell stories, because even with this match was thrown together for all intents and purposes, but they're still able and given the time to go out and tell stories, because there's only five matches on the card and you can take your time.
That's true. They're not doing what they're probably going to be doing for WrestleMania, which is making matches that last like 6 minutes long and stuff. We had a couple of other good spots that I had written down here. The double stomp that Black did had a hell of a bounce to it. That was cool. Ricochet's move, which Mario Ranallo referred to it as a flying corkscrew tiger drop. I was like, I don't know what the fuck that means, but it's amazing. I've never heard that in my life as far as I can remember. And I love that he just got to a point where he said, what is life?
That was right before Ro jumped off with the senton, isn't it?
Yeah, like, it was.
What is life? What is happening here?
The Ricochet move, and then it was Hansen that jumped off the top, if I remember correctly. I think so. I don't remember for sure.
I was more like taken by the Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper reference he made right at the start of the match.
Oh, they made a couple.
There were three of those that I had written down too. The Lady Gaga one, for anybody who didn't notice, was he said that they have more chemistry than Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, and they're not in the shallow tonight, or whatever it was. Another one that he had gotten later on was, he said, Johnny Gargano has more heart than Valentine's Day. And like, my favorite one of the night was, Shayna Baszler's treated the women's roster like a baby treats a diaper. Fucking love that. That was great. Mauro Ranallo is the best. I have a note that says, man, I was starting to get nervous after the Black Mass and the 630. Having Hansen push Black onto them was a great way to break up the pin. And then
it wasn't the 630 that got the pinfall. It was the highest shooting star press start I've ever seen. He seems to go 10 feet into the air on that shooting star press. It was just unbelievable. Like, Billy Kidman, eat your heart out.
For being smart enough to, like, well, I'm not getting the win on this. I'm not even going to hit my finish. You know, like, I'll do the shooting star. It'll look just as cool and be just as believable, but it's not my finish.
And the balance that he had with that, too.
Oh, yeah, that was perfect. Because it's just like, it means the cover just can't come immediately. Because he landed with such velocity that he literally bounces up into the air about a couple of feet as well.
Ricochet's just, he's something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I really loved how this ended, which was not just the pinfall itself, which I thought that Ricochet was going to be injured. And I was like, oh, fuck, don't tell me that that's going to be the case. But he seems like he might be fine. But I liked how after the match, they did a little thing where War Raiders laid down the championships and then they bowed to them. And then they got out of the ring and they let them say their goodbyes. And I was like, you know what? That's really fucking nice. Like, not only is that cool just as far as, like, you know, in a kayfabe sense of going, like, oh, these two babyface teams respect each other and whatever. But it was just kind of cool that it was slightly different from the typical handshake. And it was cool that they gave them, they're the champions, they won the match, and they still gave them the chance to get their little goodbyes in, because we know that they're going up to the main roster, and this is the last time that they're performing on a takeover. So I like that quite a bit. That might have been, like, one of my absolute favorite parts of the whole night.
I agree.
Yeah, it was great for them to get their moment to just say goodbye to the crowd and the crowd to give them the warm reception they deserved. I hope this leads to more positive things for the War Raiders going forward, because even though they're a babyface team, they kind of have always been in a situation where the other team that they're facing is even more popular or just cheered for based on the fact that these guys are huge. And so the team they're facing is almost always underdogs. But and I hope for... it...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I hope it leads to a bit more like positive reinforcement behind them as babyfaces.
And for what it's worth, you know, we don't see much of the War Raiders for being the tag team champions. Like, we see a lot of, or saw a lot of Ricochet and Black as singles guys. We saw a lot of the Undisputed Era. So, of course, their opponents were always going to get a little bit more of the love from the audience because they're seen as bigger stars.
And I'm only nervous about the future when it comes to them, when it comes to their challengers, because, I mean, Forgotten Sons, like, meh. You know, there's not the strongest landscape for them to be working with, if especially if the Undisputed Era go up to the main roster. At that point, we've already seen that too, so I'm hoping that we get an influx of people and they get a lot of more people to work with.
Well, I'm going to say that for every division, as strong as NXT is when it comes to takeovers, they need some new stars.
No, they don't. I'm just putting it out there immediately. They don't need new people. They've got people in there that are extremely talented. They just haven't been given a spotlight.
Like, who would you like to see be the next challengers?
Bolto and Aichner.
They are
definitely incredibly talented as a tag team. But you could look at the Street Profits. They've definitely get more of a fair shake. I know that's still babyface. But the War Raiders, I think, have enough ability to, like, sit in a bit more of a middle ground. You could do Forgotten Sons, for all their, like, low points, they do have some chemistry together. So they could develop a little bit more going forward, but I think that's still probably a long way into the future. You've got Mustache Mountain still hanging around. You've got, Lorcan and Birch, even though Lorcan is now seemingly 205 Live, like, bound, but there seems to be some crossover between the two brands. I think there are options out there. I wouldn't say that it's you shouldn't have more people coming into the tag team division going forward, because you definitely should if you do have the opportunity to bring some talent on board. But I don't think it's such a deluge that they're going to struggle to find their next challengers. And I don't think this is the end of takeover tag team matches being some of the best matches on the entire card.
And for what it's worth, I think Robert Strauss also has a tag team that he's managing. So they have things in the works, and I'm sure it'll turn out perfectly because it's NXT. But I think this show was definitely like, okay, we got the new season coming in, for lack of a better term.
I hope it's not like a spinoff, one of those kind of things. Yeah, fantastic way to start this card, and major, major thumbs up. When we had a little shot of the crowd with Toni Storm and Piper Niven, it was just sort of like, hey, there was NXT UK a little bit. Nothing really too much to that. No big surprises of like how Kaylee Ray and Jazzy Gaber were the last time and stuff, but it's nice to see these people and everything. And we'll get to one of those a little bit later. And we had the North American Championship with Velveteen Dream retaining over Matt Riddle, which I was pretty shocked about. Were you guys surprised about that?
I was a little shocked, but it was one of those things that as soon as I saw him counter into the cradle, I went, okay, they figured it out. You know, that instant, like, that's always a good finish when the guy is a submission expert. You can just get that sneak, aha, I outsmarted you for a moment. I didn't need to be better than you. I just had to outsmart you for 3 seconds. And this was a really fun match, as I'm sure we all thought it would be going into it.
Yeah, I didn't expect the result, but the way that they actually told the story, it made total sense by the end of it.
Tell you what was really shocking to me was the crowd. They started out and they were pro Riddle. Velveteen Dream comes out and he comes out a great entrance. He's the fucking Statue of Liberty, which is like, all right, there you go. It's on my list of potential best entrances of the year. And then very quickly on, it seems like the crowd goes from being yay Riddle, yay Velveteen Dream to, oh, fuck you, Riddle. We want Velveteen Dream to win. And I was like, you know, I'm a big fan of Velveteen Dream, but I didn't think that they would be turning as much as they did. And Riddle kind of came off as somebody who I was like, you know what? There might be a heel turn in the future for him.
What? I think that was how the match was supposed to be framed, essentially. That was like the structure of it was Riddle. Basically, the story that I got from the match is Riddle is a much better fighter than Velveteen Dream. Like, Riddle was in control and dominant for pretty much 90% of that match. And he had Velveteen Dream on the ropes. Velveteen Dream was kept surviving, kept clawing back into it every now and again, had a few hope spots and had his big like comeback towards the end. But even in that sense, Riddle was still pretty in control or surviving well enough that it seemed pretty obvious that he was going to win in the end. And then, like Rob says, like, he just got him in the submission and Dream just about managed to get into a roll-up and keeps him down for 3 seconds. It's like, it's not a case of Velveteen Dream was the better man on the night. He was just better for 3 seconds.
Yeah, and sometimes that's all you need. And I'll say it a million times every time we watch a takeover. NXT just gets the chance to tell great stories. And this was another great story.
Anybody do a count on how many axe handles there were?
I did not.
I think there was either 3 or 4.
Oh, I counted more than 3, but I stopped being able to keep track, and I'm pretty sure that he landed at 6 or 7 throughout the night.
It's weird because it's a move that's so simple to do, but not many people do it. I think the only people that do it nowadays in the wrestling landscape are Velveteen Dream, The Miz, and Chris Jericho.
Do you think that was an homage to Macho Man?
It could have been. You can argue it that way, but I think it's just Velveteen Dream, much like the Macho Man, is just a great character, and the wrestling and the moves that he does are secondary, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's also, Ranallo was talking in the commentary about Dream and says that Dream takes inspiration from other superstars of the past that he used to watch growing up and stuff along those lines, so maybe it's a little bit of Macho Man. There's obviously a bit of Hulk Hogan in there with the hulking up and the big boot. There was a bit of Billy Gunn with the Famouser in this one as well. I got to think there's probably better people to try and base your moveset on, but who am I to judge?
I think it was one of those things where he was trying to get his... All right, who's in the area? Hogan's here. Billy Gunn's going to the Hall of Fame. You know, he's getting all that kind of stuff in, but I enjoyed this match.
At the end of it, he's just like, give me a guitar and a pair of scissors.
I absolutely adored this match in terms of like the way that they built up Riddle as somebody, because Riddle's character is that he's so laid back and he's very positive and he's very, well, he's the ultimate bro. So he's just takes things as in this droid. And then during this match, you just see him just become more and more frustrated and the cracks begin to show as he just can't keep this guy down. And that leads to him kicking Dream when he's in the ropes and trying to hold on to submissions a little bit too long and things like that. So it's just a case of maybe this could be the foundations for a future heel turn. I know obviously at the end of the match, they did the fist bump and Dream pretty much reluctantly did it just to show that he has a bit of respect for Riddle. But it could be the start of future matches between these two where Riddle becomes more and more frustrated as time goes on.
I could see the heel turn in the future being based off of the idea of you're not a fucking fighter, I'm a legitimate fighter, you're kind of a clown and I want to kick your ass, that kind of a thing. And Velveteen Dream just being like, dude, shut up. You know, I'm fucking Velveteen Dream.
I like the idea of Riddle having a temper, you know, you think he's this chill bro, but you catch him off guard and he's just like not so cool, you know what I mean? Maybe he's not so laid back.
We got the return of Silent Rage coming.
That's right.
I wasn't as big on this match as the previous one. I thought that it was good, but it was it wasn't anything that like I would tell somebody like you gotta go see this kind of thing. It's still a thumbs up for sure. And
well, they were following a fucking hell of a match.
Yeah, and that's just one of those things that kind of hinders them. Like I kind of feel like maybe if this would have gone on first, maybe we'd be a little bit better off. I don't know, but again, doesn't mean I'm crapping on it. I like the fucking match. So anybody that's like, you know, you gave it a 3.89 and it should have been a 3.95. It's, you know, relax.
I think this match had a better story arc overall than the previous one, but the previous one was more like flashy and had a bit more like just constant high spots over and over again, which obviously would get a bit more of like a crowd attention. Whereas this one was more about just telling a flow of a story, which was a bit more subtle in its approach.
Yeah. And this show reeked to me of, all right, this wasn't exactly what we had in mind, but we're making really good with what we had. You know what I mean? Because I don't think that even necessarily Ricochet and Black were the idea, or the Adam Cole, you know, was in the main event, or it was supposed to be a one-on-one between these two. And I think some of that showed. And yeah, but overall, really great match.
I'll come back to this in a little bit, but I agree with you. I think that only one of these five matches was what they wanted, and that's the UK title match.
I agree.
I think that, in particular, the women's championship match shows a sort of like lack of confidence. And obviously, they wanted Ciampa and they wanted Gargano to be the headline, so that they had done a whole thing with Adam Cole being in with Velveteen Dream and Matt Riddle. And I kind of wonder if maybe the original plan was that Adam Cole was supposed to take the loss. That way it would have kind of helped Matt Riddle not look as weak, because he doesn't look weak. I don't want to get that kind of impression, but maybe if he would have been in the match, then he would have been the one taking the pin, and then it wouldn't have been Riddle. And they could have done a future match, you know, Velveteen Dream versus Matt Riddle, and then maybe this one's the one that they would have gone with on that one, you know? Possibility. You never really know. Any other things you guys want to say about this one?
I love the Velveteen Dream and all his entrances, and God, I love having a character in wrestling. The end.
Matt Riddle should come up to the main roster. He's ready. That's basically my impression of him is out there. He's, as a wrestler and the personality, and not so much like his promo skills, but his in-ring charisma, he should come in and just destroy somebody on his first night. And yeah, I think Velveteen Dream has more of an impact that he can make in NXT going forward as like one of its standard bearers, whereas Riddle is a megastar in waiting.
Just have him retire Brock.
I would do that.
Can do that. He's like, he's a legitimate fighter. He's one of the few people who can do that.
I'm not. This is definitely not my idea. This is an idea that Sean Ross Sapp posited on like Twitter, saying that what he would do with Matt Riddle was bring him up the night after WrestleMania, after Brock has lost the Universal Championship, and then just have him take out Brock until SummerSlam to build a match between those two. But obviously, you can't do that because Brock would probably be wrestling on the Saudi Arabia show. But you could do it till then, I guess.
Well, even then, I mean, that's been already pushed. It was supposed to be May 3rd, and now it's been pushed to June 7th, if I remember correctly.
I have a theory for that. And I think since we're talking NXT, I'll just say it. I think it's because even though it'll be not in the same town, they want a major WWE show paired with an NXT takeover.
I got a feeling the people that were responsible from purchasing the event just said, we don't want to do it on the 3rd.
And that was it. Possible too.
Because it's a paid show and they just, you know, fuck you, we want to do it this time. WWE was like, okay, boss.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
You know, you're still going to give us $50 million? Like, you know, whatever. We'll get it all sorted out, you know. We had another shot of the crowd, and this time Kushida was in the crowd.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know that guy now that I watched Wrestle Kingdom. So he's, you know, going to be popping in soon. I'm sure he's going to make an impact. And I guess the question to ask is, where do you guys see him going at first? Who are you going to pair him up with?
North American title. Whoever it is.
No, he won't. He won't be. Initially, I can imagine his first match being against Conan Rose.
Oh, fuck on.
So, somebody like that. Well, he's just, he's like, he's immensely talented. Kushida is an incredible wrestler, but there's language barrier issue. A lot of people in NXT, NXT fans probably will know who he is because they're usually more smarter, and they were obviously smart to him in this arena. But for maybe a wider audience, they may not know who he is or what he's all about. So they need to give him an introductory feud with somebody that's not involved in a championship picture. So whether that is someone like Conan Reeves or a... You need someone he can beat, essentially. But obviously, Cassius Ohno's now in NXT UK, so you can't choose him. So you're left with, like, the...
Pick Jackson Riker. Let him fucking fuck up Jackson Riker.
Well, they seem to have plans for Jackson Riker going forward, though. So, like, I see Jackson Riker more in the North American picture than Kushida straight away. But maybe like, either Bartel or Eichner as individuals. You've got people from 205 Live you could port over if you need to. I'm sure they'll be able to find some enhancement talent for him in the build-up to him eventually moving into the North American title picture.
Eichner is really good. I hope he gets a shot.
Maybe, and I'm going to try to get his name right because I asked Caroline, actually, because, you know, my Brazilian connection when it comes to that. Maybe Cesar Bononi. Pretty sure that that's how she said I was supposed to pronounce it.
Oh, yeah. Maybe him or Jowd.
And that's supposed to be, let me try to remember that one. It is Adrian, and it's Jauj, I think. Which I was like, yeah, I ain't getting that fucking right. Yeah, that's Jowd from now on to me, you know, whatever. But those guys need to come up at some point, you know.
Mendoza still in NXT? I know Carrillo went to 205 Live.
Raul Mendoza, yeah. He's a babyface, though. I'm pretty sure that Kushida.
Yeah, that'll be a good match. But that'll be a good, like, introductory match, and whoever he's going to feud with. If they turn him heel, Keith Lee.
Well, I just think it needs to be someone Kushida can realistically beat. And the size difference is a big impact with the Keith Lee thing.
Oh, it's Riddick Moss. They can throw in there. You know.
Sabatelli comes back, he can give him he can beat the other two members of the Forgotten Sons, one of the Street Profits, something along those lines. There's definitely people in there. He could have a match with Bugenhagen or something.
Hell yeah. I'm all for more Bugenhagen.
That name still is just so fucking weird to me. Bugenhagen. It's like, I don't know, I can't picture people going like, you know, in the annals of history, WWE superstars like The Rock, Hulk Hogan, The Ultimate Warrior, Eric Bugenhagen. Sounds like the dude that should win like a sausage competition or something. Like, I don't know. Either way, we'll see what Kushida has in store for us in the future. That's going to take us into... If we're talking about getting outside of the American system, we got the UK championship match, which was Walter defeating Pete Dunne to win the title. Let's go down a couple of notes that I've got written down here. One of them is New World Symphony. Symphony is such a fucking good song. I originally came across back that in 2006 in college, and I was just like, this is a good fucking song. I like this. I'm going to download it. And when I saw that Walter was using it, I was just like, oh, fuck, he's using that. Like, that's such a good, like, I never even would have imagined that would have been a good wrestling theme. And it works so well. Just thumbs up when it comes to that. But my original impression of this was that it wasn't feeling like it was anything special. And it took a couple minutes for me to start to change my mind about it. Like, the first, maybe the 2 minutes or so, I was just like, this isn't working out all that well. I think that this is... kind of the hype was too much. Thankfully, you know, as I just said, it worked out, and I liked the match quite a bit. It felt a little bit different. It wasn't just like spot after spot, but they had some spots here and there. You know, that power bomb from the top rope that finished the match,
Whew.
What did you guys think about this? Because my opinion from this was, whether or not, you know, I've never had any fucking in-ring training, so I don't know how this works, but it seemed to me like he tossed him the way that he did to make sure that he wouldn't land on his neck. Like, it was kind of like a on-the-fly, I don't know if this is going to work out, so let me just kind of push you forward a little bit type thing. Or do you guys think that was planned?
Probably was, and I mean, either way, it looked gnarly as hell, and it all worked out, and I'm going to just say, I really like this match. I feel like Tony a little bit, that it took a little bit to get going, and I think as good as this match was, it had been 100 times better in front of the UK crowd.
Yeah.
The fact is, even though the New York crowd is smart, the WrestleMania crowd is smart, they weren't as on fire for Walter versus Dunn as the UK crowd would have been. And I think that took a little bit away from the match. Because, you know, the chops didn't get the reaction that they should have gotten. They got a reaction, but it wasn't like, ah, which it would have been in the UK, I think. And they just started kicking each other in the head, and it was, they turned a corner in that match where it was just like, oh, this is fucking brutal, man. And I love it. I love when it gets to that level. And Walter became my favorite UK wrestler because he did the one thing nobody does in the ring with Pete Dunne. He sold the fucking fingers the entire way through, and I respect him so much for that because they always do the finger spot, and then nobody, like, sells the fingers after the initial reaction. And Walter was, like, going back there the entire time, like, ah, this really hurts. Even in the, they did a digital exclusive, and he's still putting ice on the fingers. Like, that was the main takeaway. It was like, oh, this guy really, you know, with the joint manipulation, hurt me. And then I'm going to let Callum talk, because I'm sure he loved this match. But this match was the best match of the night before the bell even rang, because Percy Watson got kicked off the commentary. Callum?
I know that's obviously a positive, but this match is a marvel, an absolute marvel. And I can understand the interpretation of the fact that he may not have lived up to some other height, but this match felt like a fight. This was a fight between two superstars. It wasn't a case of like, oh, we're not going to do any reverse hurricanranas, we're not going to do any dives out of the ring. This is just two people beating the shit out of each other. And I love these matches because it feels real. You can actually suspend your disbelief into it a little bit. I know it's still obviously choreographed and you can still tell that sort of things, but it's my initial thing. Obviously, I don't want to spoil too much going ahead, but how you're describing your initial approach to this match and how some people in the crowd seem to approach this initial start of the match is how I actually approached the initial start of the Gargano-Cole match. And I was watching the start of the Gargano-Cole match and thought, wow, this is really choreographed.
Mm-hmm.
And that took me out of the first like portion of the match completely, because I thought, wow, these two are trying to have a really good match, as opposed to these two, which is, wow, these two are really trying to beat the shit out of each other. I fucking love this. That's kind of the attitude I take to it. I've spoken about this before when I've spoken about like Gargano matches, the one with Ricochet at the previous takeover. Gargano has a tendency to just want to have a good match, and that's not really the attitude I want wrestlers taking going into it. I want them to want to tell their story better. And then obviously as that match went on, and we'll discuss it later, it got much better. But this one, it was clear that these two were just going to be, it was going to be Walter using his size and power and his chops to wear down Pete Dunne, and Pete was going to fight, use scratch claw, use his joint manipulation, attack the legs, attack the fingers, do everything he possibly could do to keep up with Walter. And it turned into like a really excellent brawl.
So, I mean, that's essentially what this ended up boiling down to, which was, how do you balance out the size difference? You can't have it be a total squash or else it's boring. And you don't want it to be a total squash either, because your champion has been champion for 685 days. So, you know, if it's a total squash, it comes off as cheap. And that wouldn't be a service to Walter either, because then he's just, you know, he's not a real thing. You know, he's just kind of an empty shell. So they needed to have Pete Dunne be this scrappy type of, you know, I can't die and I'm just going to, you know, you said the joint manipulation and him just trying to maneuver anything. Like, if he were more on the heel side, he would have done eye gouges and he would have potentially low blowed him and, like, you know, a bunch of different things like that. But since he's a babyface, he's staying within the rules. And you're getting spots like he's getting picked up for some, you know, kind of throw him across the room type of thing. And he's grabbing onto his pinky and he's pulling it down. And that's how he's going to get out of the move. And that's what was fun about this was Pete Dunne is definitely not the one going into this match. Even though he's the champion for that long, he's the underdog still. And he needed to fight his way through it. And he needed to come up short. We needed a new champion. And, you know, he looked strong in his loss. And Walter looked strong in his win. So you can't get much better than that. You can't ask for much more than that, really, really.
One of the most exciting things about this for me is this isn't over. You can tell that they've got to have a match in the UK at some point. The next TakeOver UK show, this will be the headline match. The rematch between these two, which in front of a UK crowd will probably get, like Rob says, a bigger, more visceral reaction than this one.
But you think it'll have a stipulation to it?
I don't think it needs it. I don't think the rematch needs to have a stipulation associated with it. I think you'd probably end up seeing Pete Dunne go outside the rules a little bit more in the rematch, but I think because he needs to go outside the rules and that needs to be actually seen as like cheating or desperation, you can't have it as a no disqualification match because then he's allowed to do that. You need to have it so it's still against the rules, but he's trying to exploit every single loophole he possibly can to try and like beat this guy. So I don't think a stipulation is necessary. If it was, then I'd probably go something along the lines of like a last man standing match. That would probably make the most sense for like these sort of two, because essentially these two just went to war in this match. And I love the like the beautiful simplicity of it, because some of the biggest spots in this match were either water chopping Pete Dunne or a big boot to the face, or obviously just like a big splash to finish it. It's like nothing's too complicated or too stylish. It's just very visceral, which I appreciate a lot. I also love the spot where obviously Pete Dunne's done a lot of like finger breaks and a lot of like just joint manipulation, stuff like that. And then he tries to go for another one and Walter blocks it with just his hand. Like, just stops the fingers from going, like going apart, just like holds it still because of his just strength and fights out of it. I just think these two have a really good dynamic. And I think in one or two more matches, we'll probably see the very best of what they can both produce. Maybe that's why it may not have come out as like as great as many people had hoped, because this isn't the end for like their feud.
I agree 100%.
So new champion means I need to ask the question, who do you think's winning the belt next?
I have no fun. That's the first thing I texted you. Said, who the hell is going to beat Walter?
It's difficult to assess at this point in time, just because there's a lot of talent in NXT UK, but like Walter needs to hold that title for a while. And obviously, there's really no precedent because there's only been two UK champions and one of them held the title for nearly 2 years. So obviously, it's a different dynamic. It's a different landscape now with like a weekly television show, whereas Pete Dunne, for the majority of Pete Dunne's reign, there wasn't the television show to associate yourselves with. It's whether Walter stays the babyface or he eventually turns heel. That will determine a lot of the things. I could see it going to someone like Tyler Bate again if he does move to a bit more of like a singles role. Jordan Devlin would probably make a lot of sense if Walter stays babyface. I know obviously the size differential is massive, but you could get lucky. You could have it in a multi-man match, that sort of thing, to try and like take the title off Walter without actually beating him or giving him too many odds to overcome. But yeah, at this point in time, he's just too much of a dominant force to really even consider who would be the one to eventually beat him.
My gut reaction was Dave Mastiff, just because he's the biggest guy.
Is Dave Mastiff the one that wears like the Vader gear, or is that Eddie Dennis?
No, that's Mastiff. Okay, Dennis is the really scrawny kind of guy.
Okay, so yeah, they must have came to my mind as well. But
I don't think he's popular enough.
Give him 9 months, they might be able to do something.
Is there anyone in the UK that's not signed that you think could be a future champion?
I can't say that I'm familiar enough, but like not hugely entrenched in like UK scene, so I can't really think of anyone who stands out. Like maybe if they could bring like Bram in from Impact.
Yes.
Because he's like a pretty like jacked guy with like a big fighting background, so maybe he could have some sort of social with it. Like if things really go like poorly for him on the main roster, you could bring Drew McIntyre down for it.
I agree with that.
You've obviously got Cassius Ohno in NXT UK as well.
Is Bram the one that was married to Charlotte?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know if that's necessarily a thing.
Oh, yeah, that's potential. Well, he'd only be in the UK.
Still, so, though, you know.
Yeah, maybe. But, I mean, you can't exactly get Grado on board and have him beat Walter for it or something along those lines. But, again, just depends. There's a lot of UK talent that's signed to a lot of like bigger promotions, so you're not going to get Ospreay, you're not going to get Sabre Jr., you're not going to get Davey Boy Smith, all of that stuff.
Sabre Jr. can do it if they just keep the belt on Walter until his contracts expire. Just let Zach do it. He can out-wrestle anybody.
I think Zach's pretty happy with New Japan at the moment.
Man, I would mark out so much if Bad News Barrett won.
I mean, that'd be something, yeah. But yeah, cool. Like I said, we have to look too far into the future to assess.
So we're all in agreement. Cesaro is going to become a UK exclusive and beat Walter.
Well, Shane is probably more likely.
You know what, though? That actually could fucking happen. That's like, that wouldn't surprise me all that much if at some point the bar splits up because Sheamus isn't able to do it anymore. And if Cesaro goes over and they kind of make him, you know, let's make you a big deal over there. That wouldn't shock me.
I'd be into it.
Look at what happened with Kurt Angle and ECW, you know? Could be that kind of a thing.
Yeah, he left after 2 months.
Well, Cesaro could leave after 2 months, too. You don't know. He can win that title and, you know, forfeit it. We'll see. This isn't happening until 2020. So, you know, down the line. We had a shot of the crowd again as Edge and Beth Phoenix. Edge's hair is long as shit now. Let's just totally forgot that was the thing. And
I'm a fan of that, always.
I was kind of digging the shorter hair a little bit, but... you know, whatever. Doesn't really matter to me. It's not like I have a personal investment in it. But good to see people enjoying, you know, obviously they've been wrestling fans for like their entire lives. So to just kind of sit down and watch a little NXT, that's cool. I hate when this happens where my least favorite part of the night is the women's match because then, of course, people are going to think that that's a reason. But I got to say, I was looking forward to the Fatal 4-Way. A lot more than what it ended up being. I was disappointed. Shayna Baszler retains the title by making Bianca Belair tap out. And by the end of this, my overall thought was, I wonder if this was a stall and that they didn't have anything better. Because Belair and Baszler, that seemed like that was something that just kind of, where do you go? Bianca Belair's got to have the momentum. You got to put her in that kind of spot sort of thing. And then they just were like, yeah, just do it again. But we're going to throw in Kairi Sane, who's already had multiple matches. And we're going to throw in Io Shirai, who could have been the next contender on her own. Yet maybe they thought that she wasn't good enough to stand alone on her, you know, in a singles match or something. And having Belair tap out and the match itself just sort of being what it was. It wasn't bad, but I didn't get anything out of this, really. You know?
I think it's difficult because I don't think it was a bad match by any stretch of the imagination, but it's difficult to be a good match in a sea of 4 matches that on any other card would be the best match in the entire show. Just, it was a bit clunky, a bit of a cluster in certain cases. I would have liked to have seen more action between Sane and Shirai rather than just being essentially a tag team match. between like them and a tag team that is completely dysfunctional in Baszler and Belair. But I still think like it told a decent enough story with the other people getting like involved. There was not a few decent spots into it. It's quite clear that when they eventually do come up to the main roster, that Sane and Shirai should be tag champions for a very long time because they just get each other really well.
Mm-hmm.
And they, frankly, they're a better tag team than anybody that's currently on the main roster, for, okay. Especially on the women's side of things.
Can I pitch something real quick since you said that? They clearly worked as a team the entire match, almost as if their whole purpose was to showcase what they can do as a team. We know Saudi Arabia is June 7th and TakeOver San Jose is June 8th. Is TakeOver San Jose the Boston HUD connection versus the Sky Pirates?
Extremely good chance that that's the case.
Yeah, especially San Jose is Bailey's hometown, so.
I would be completely into it, but. And I don't know if you guys were finished saying what you wanted to say, were you?
Well, it's just more on lines of with. In the match itself, it was just I kind of understand the finish. It's clearly not what the crowd wanted,
mm-hmm.
And I know it's like not every match should be a babyface winning and the crowd gets super excited about it. But you could tell after the double burning hammer spot that they were just ready for Belair to just pin one of them and get the win. And then as soon as she locks on the clutch, the crowd is going, "Oh fuck! Oh fuck! Oh fuck!" It's just. If you're getting the sense that the crowd are over Baszler being the champion.
Well, she's been the champion long enough at this point that she's run through pretty much the entire roster. And now that she's running through people a second time, and that's not as fun, you know? Mm-hmm. Like they could have, I don't know what their plans are in the future, and we might have a completely different perspective of this on Wednesday after, you know, something potentially happens at WrestleMania, something potentially happens on Raw, SmackDown. But it did feel underwhelming at the end of that because it just sort of felt like, all right, we're exactly where we were. Nothing new has been established. Shayna Baszler can still beat the person that she beat before. And who the hell is the next challenger? Now, at this point, if they go, Io Shirai is the next challenger, it'll be like, well, she didn't fucking win. So who cares?
I immediately said, well, I guess it's Candace.
It has to be Candace. Yeah. Like, there's no other option. It has to be her. I mean, they might build up, like, Mia Yim in the meantime, and they might do something like that, but you have to start thinking that it's just, like, now that Gargano, we'll get to that later, but, you know, that's out of the way. Now let's start building up Candace, that kind of thing.
Well, it's either Candace, or it depends on when Dakota Kai is coming back.
I don't have any faith in Dakota Kai doing that.
Well, her whole story is based around Shayna Baszler, so she could.
No, I think if when she's able to, which might not be for however many months, I think that if they give her any kind of spot, it'll be like, I came back and I need to fight you, and she loses. Like, it's that kind of like, that underdog who just couldn't fucking do it.
I agree that I don't see her winning the championship, but I could see her being like Baszler's last match in NXT. After Baszler loses the championship to Candice LeRae or something like that, and Dakota Kai comes back to get revenge and finally gets the victory over Baszler, but it's not for a championship.
I actually think Dakota Kai is going to go more on the NXT UK side.
No.
They were using her in that regard before she had left for the injury.
It would make sense. The New Zealand connection is obviously part of the Commonwealth and stuff like that. It would make sense for her to be on that side of things. But I think she's popular enough in the US that she could do that as well. But it's hard to tell going forward. I think it's pretty clear. I'm getting the sense that the reason why Baszler is still the champion and still down there is because Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir aren't ready yet.
Yep.
To stand on their own. And it quite frankly shows in the NXT in terms of their booking, because I don't think they've actually won a tag team match together as of yet, at least not in like a live setting or a TV taping. So they're clearly like in a situation where they're both almost like big enhanced talent or just heavies for her, And if they can't actually function as a tag team well enough, or they can't have good enough matches yet, then they essentially need to be the heavies for someone. And the only person they can do that for is Shayna Baszler, especially if they don't want them to move up to the main roster yet, because that means they'd have to have matches on the main roster, and they seemingly aren't ready for that either.
Well, I want to read you guys this tweet from a writer, Scarlett Harris, who writes for Fanbyte, I believe, does a lot of wrestling content, but it says, unpopular opinion, NXT is coasting on its reputation of kickstarting the women evolution and pushing the four horsewomen. Women's wrestling is not a priority for them anymore. Agree or disagree?
Disagree.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I think Shayna Baszler's the best heel on the entire roster, and she's been booked that way. I mean, it's quite clear, because you look, let's take, obviously, again, talk about the main event a bit more, but take Adam Cole, for example. Adam Cole is supposed to be, oh, he's a great heel. He gets cheered all the time. Baszler does her job. She gets booed. And she's booked really well in that regard. And I think...
I think that the problem here is Baszler doesn't get a chance at a Fatal 4-Way to be able to be the heel as much.
No, definitely not. But I don't think... Listen, have they made mistakes? Yes, they have made mistakes. Candice LeRae should have been much more prominent in the position than she has been. She's been presented too much as like just the wife of Johnny Gargano as opposed to her own individual character. And if she is going to be NXT champ, like women's champion, and like be the next challenger for Baszler, she needs to be able to stand out on her own. So hopefully they do take steps towards that. I think you have issues with people like Aaliyah and Vanessa Bourne and Tenaya Conti. They're just not good enough as wrestlers. And especially with someone like Aaliyah, who's, I'm not saying she's terrible by any stretch of the imagination, but like she's been there for 3 or 4 years at this point, and she's only decent at best.
Aaliyah's been there long enough that if she's still not considered a main part of that roster, she's not going anywhere. And there's just people that like they come in and they're a main part of the roster a month later, and she's gotten years.
I get the sense that this is like, it's difficult because you can't, it's difficult to build a division that's as strong as it previously was. Like you don't have, like Charlotte Flair's on the main roster for a reason. So is Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks and Bayley and Asuka. They're on there because they were the biggest stars from that point. And the women's roster on the main show is quite thin in comparison to obviously the men's side of things. And so when you do have like a top talent in NXT, it's more likely on the women's side, it's more likely they're going to get called up to the main roster. And so they don't get a chance to like flesh out their characters in NXT as much. So you need to get more of an influx of people coming in, but you've got people like Chelsea Green that are going to be coming in soon when she heals up, Tegan Knox, eventually when she heals up, will be able to get back into the swing of things. I know Jazzy Gabler is probably going to be in the NXT UK side of things, but you could bring her in on this one. She'd prove popular enough in the Mae Young Classic.
There's MJ Jenkins, there's Lacey, there's Casey, there's, you know, they have people in the waiting in the wings to just kind of start up this next class, and eventually it'll start balancing itself out. But if they keep making it to where Baszler just, she and Shafir and Duke just beat the shit out of everybody, and then the next challengers come along and it's not anything really all that special, then people aren't going to care as much. And then
I would start to go along the lines that they're starting to, not as much demote, but giving less attention to the women's division.
Well, yeah. I want to go back to what I said during the tag team division, and I had said they need more people, and Calum, you immediately said they just need to give the people that they have a chance. That's kind of what I mean. Like, it's time for a new freshman class, let's say. Like, it's time for the people that they have to start being featured into positions. Because one thing I don't think people remember is NXT's women's division suffered because of WWE's need to promote the women on the main roster. There's no reason that Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan, for, you know, whatever we think about them, should have been called up so quickly. Same thing with Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, yes, they're doing fine on the main roster, but they could have added to the depth of the NXT women's division. And on top of that, they lost Ember Moon really quickly after that as well. So that's why the division's been the Shayna Baszler show, because Shayna is the only person capable enough to carry it.
And I'd also like to obviously call attention to the fact that we obviously talk about NXT and how great all the shows are and stuff like that, and the depth of talent they do have on there, but it's the developmental brand still.
Mm-hmm.
This is still the place where people should be learning how to wrestle and learning and getting their reps in. And obviously they have a huge influx of independent talent that have already got all the reps they need, but they're just on there because they're incredibly popular and they quote-unquote can't do the WWE style yet, which is fucking bullshit, but that's the excuse they give anyway. But especially on the women's side, a lot of their talent is either homegrown or very recently recruited. So they essentially are taking more time to like build up their reps and get better in the ring. And yeah, that's kind of the situation there are at the moment. Is there room definitely to bring in some more talent from further afield if it's available? Definitely. But a lot of that is getting eaten up and taken away. Like, there's no you're not going to get Tessa Blanchard, you're not going to get Ali, you're not going to get Rosemary, you're not going to get Ivelisse.
Britt Baker.
Yeah, Britt Baker, obviously. You're not going to get Ivelisse, stuff like that.
And this is a world that we're going to have to get used to because AEW and other places are becoming competitors again, even if a lot of them are doing it by sharing talent amongst themselves, but wrestlers don't all need to go to WWE, so that's something we're going to have to get used to. But I think, for what it's worth, they're fine. The wrong decision happened here. It was Bianca's night. It's just that, again, okay, Bianca won. What do you do? Do you have like Duke and Shafir? No, just keep it on Shayna, and when the time comes, the people will go crazy because she lost it.
I just get a little bit worried that the next thing in line is going to be, now we need to figure out who the next challenger is, and we don't have anybody. Well, there's basically two options. Either they go with, let's go with Io Shirai, because she's the only one that didn't fully lose. And at that point, I don't care, because she already lost this match, and you know they've had this feud, so it's just sort of, let's go with option C, kind of. Or they realize that there isn't anybody else left, so they go, fuck, we need to start building up Deonna Purrazzo, or we need to start building up Mia Yim, or, you know, like, whoever it is that the next person is, where they just go, like, all right, the next set of tapings, we're going to push this one person to get to the point where that she can challenge Shayna and lose. You know, like, I don't want to see that two-month build of, let's start from square one and then work all the way up to a championship match, knowing that that's only the only purpose is just to, you know, eat up the next 2 months.
I know she lost twice. Do you do one more match with Bianca and put the hair on the line?
Only if you put the hair on the line. If you do it in any other way, if you do like a last woman standing match or something, I don't think it matters. And at that point, it's like, just bring her up to the main roster and make her one of those people that didn't do it all in NXT, and let's see if she can do it on Raw, or you know what I mean?
But again, you know what? It's talking about NXT being depleted for the main roster. Nikki Cross, Lacey Evans, why?
Well, the same thing happened with EC3, and, you know, they did it. They did that just because they wanted to get people talking and they wanted people to stop bitching in like November. That was it.
And
that's exactly the way that I thought it was going to be going down when it happened. It was just, let's get people talking about something happy. We'll figure it out later. And now it's 6 months later and they haven't figured it out yet.
And I get that, and it's fine. I just really wanted to call attention to, if there is an issue with NXT, this is likely what it is.
I want to call attention to two things that happened in the entrance, just to wrap this up, that I thought were kind of funny. Somebody hit the wrong button or whatever on Kairi Sane's music. And it was just like, bah, da, oh, da, da, da. You know, little skip on that. And Io Shirai just could not get that mask off. She was fucking struggling with that one. I thought that that was funny. Yeah, so not a bad match, just too many cooks spoiled the broth. And this would have been a lot better if it would have been a singles match, I think.
Oh, just before we move on, can we talk about my favorite spot from it, which was Bianca Belair does the thing where she does, like, just blows the kiss at Kairi Sane, and Kairi Sane catches it and smushes it into a ball, and she throws it at Io, who hits it like a baseball, and yeah. Just into the crowd.
Like, it's out of here.
Yeah, that was cute.
I thought that was a really fun one.
They're going to be good when they start fighting for those tag titles.
Oh, like, they need to hold those belts for a while.
Yeah, they're fun as hell. And that's the thing, too. Like, I don't want anybody thinking that we're crapping on this because we don't think that the four women involved are bad. They're not. And it just shouldn't have been a fatal four-way. All four of them are talented. All four of them know how to do a great match. And Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler have had great matches, multiple great matches. So we know it's not their fault, you know? It's just something wasn't on completely on tonight. Something was off. And I think that leads us into the main event, which was the 2 out of 3 falls match for the vacant NXT championship. And clearly this is not the match that they had planned. They wanted to do Gargano versus Ciampa, but Ciampa's neck injury got in the way of that. So we get Adam Cole, and even though he's the replacement, you can't go wrong with that kind of a replacement, because both of them are fucking great. And this was, Callum, you had said before that you said it took a little while to get started. And I agree with you on that.
100%.
I will say that this was a good match that turned into a great match after the second fall.
Mm-hmm.
I think the final four and the last 10-15 minutes of this match is arguably the greatest 10-15 minute match that in NXT's history. It's so filled with jeopardy and near falls, and it's got bullshit surrounding it as well with the Undisputed Era, but that just added to the overall story where Johnny Gargano just wouldn't be denied anymore. And it was an interesting dynamic, because they come out originally for like the entrance and stuff like that, and Gargano's been booed. Very, very audibly being booed at the start, because Adam Cole is more popular, despite the fact that he's a dickhead heel, and that's always been presented as since he joined. He is immensely popular. And by the end of it, they had managed to build enough goodwill for like Gargano throughout the course of the match and the way that it was booked, that it felt like the moment that we'd all been waiting for at the end, even though it seemed quite clear at the start of the match that people were waiting to see Adam Cole get crowned NXT champion instead.
Well, it's strange because this is a match that, again, this was not the planned thing. So this wasn't the culmination of a big feud the way that it was supposed to go down, yet it felt like it needed to be the end of something like that. And the crowd was very split, and there were points at the match where people seemed like they would have been totally fine with Adam Cole winning, and then there was parts where people are like, good, Gargano didn't lose yet. And by the end of that, they're chanting both these guys, which, of course, that's what it boils down to, is the fact that both of them are fucking immensely talented. And they played up heel and face. You know, Gargano's been a heel for a while, and he's firmly back in a babyface role. He was in the position of being the underdog, even though he's not fighting somebody who's twice his size, just because it's, you know, he keeps losing. He keeps just coming a little bit shy of winning that championship here and there. You got the Undisputed Era on the outside. They're factored in. And this was a fucking nail biter. Like, one of the parts in particular that happened in here was the count out that almost led to Gargano losing. I was just like, oh, don't tell me he's going to like trip on some kind of equipment, like a wire or something, and mess up getting back in time. Cause I'm like, I'm pretty sure he's supposed to get back in, but he's really cutting it to like the very last second, kind of. And I got a little bit nervous about that. And then right after that, when they hit the super kick, I'm like, that's it. Damn. And I was feeling disappointed because I wanted Gargano to win, which is exactly what I should be feeling at that time. So that near fall got me really well. Double super kick. I wrote that down. That was a lot of fun seeing the two of them knock each other out like that. This is something I wanted to talk about. I mentioned about the final fall. After the second fall, the stakes obviously got significantly higher because now it's sudden death. There is going to be whatever the next decision is. It's going to be a new champion. I really liked how Kayla was announcing that.
That's a Triple H call all the way.
That made it sound so much more epic that it was just like, all right, that's the second fall. The next one's going to be the championship, everybody. You know, it's playing into the hand a little bit, but at the same time, it's sort of like when, you know, the music swells in a movie and you know that you're hitting the crescendo kind of thing. Big fan of that.
For me, kind of like Helm said, I was waiting for Adam Cole to get crowned. And then there was a moment where the camera zooms in on Cole on the outside telling Gargano, you're a failure. That's all you do is fail. And I went, well, I guess Johnny's winning. And then they bring out the era, and I think, I guess not. Beautiful near falls, especially that one where Gargano's already kicked out, and he still gets hit with the super kick to the back of the head, last shot. I'm thinking, oh, well, it's over. And as soon as he kicked out, I said, I don't know how he's going to win, but this place is going to fucking blow when Johnny Gargano wins. Because they were so ready when they realized, oh shit, it's actually happening. And I would be a hypocrite to say that even though I wanted Adam Cole to win, that I didn't love this, because this is exactly what I want with Kofi. The right guy won. It's the culmination of the story, and the babyface got the feel-good moment. Whatever they're going to do next, I'll wait and see. But the babyface got the feel-good moment, and that's exactly what needed to happen.
Yeah, it's just good storytelling at the end of the day. Definitely, like we've said earlier, it's not the story they wanted to tell. They wanted to tell Gargano's like final redemption and victory over Ciampa. But they told enough of the story, especially with the final four, with all the Undisputed Era getting involved, distractions, like both O'Reilly and Fish hitting their finisher on Gargano and him kicking out, just to make sure that you position Cole as the uber heel that will take any shortcut necessary to finally win the championship. But Gargano would not be, like I say, not be denied. Would just kick out of everything that they throws at him, because this is his moment and no one's taking that away from him. I would have liked it if, I know obviously it was cool to see Gargano take everyone out at the end of it. I would have preferred it if Candice had taken one of them out or something along that lines, just coming out and just like hit some sort of like dive onto all of them on the outside. I thought that would have been pretty cool. And also get her in people's minds if they are going to push her towards the Shayna Baszler thing. But in the end, it was good to see Gargano just overcome the odds single-handedly and force Cole to tap out at the end of it as well. It was a very powerful closing sequence. Like, 2 out of 3 falls matches, you're always playing a bit of an uphill battle, because especially with matches of this magnitude, it's always going to go to the third fall. So you're trying to get the crowd invested for the first 2 ones as well, and that's always going to be a bit more of a struggle because they're just waiting for the second pinfall so then they can really get into the match. But they saved, they produced enough like throughout the course of this match to make it engaging throughout.
One of the things I liked about this too, which I thought it was a nice little touch, was Gargano could have gotten a count out for that second decision, and he decided that he wanted to break up the count because he didn't want to win that way, and that wouldn't have won the thing. So it wasn't the type of thing that I was looking at that as being like, all right, well, he can't get the count out because he's not going to win the title that way. I was like, oh, if he gets the count out, then maybe that's how they go with Gargano, because he gets one decision by submission and one by count out. And when he broke that up, I'm like, huh. You know, that was a nice little touch. It just making me second guess what was going on. And I thought that when the Undisputed Era came out, I thought that we might see like Black and Ricochet and Velveteen Dream come out and help, or some debut of somebody come out and help or something like that. And at first I was a little bit disappointed that we didn't get that, because I was thinking, like thinking ahead a little bit too much more of like WrestleMania 10, where everybody at the end is like hoisting Bret Hart up in the air and all that. And I was thinking like, maybe we're going to get one of those moments and the rest of the roster is going to endorse Gargano and blah, blah, blah. And when it didn't happen, I was like, oh man, now I'm nervous that he's going to lose and whatever. And again, played right into the hand. And when he finally got that, that submission win, I was just, I had felt this kind of sigh of relief. I was just like, oh good, this story is kind of over. As much as I loved it and I want to see what's coming up next, I did kind of want some kind of a finality to it. And then Ciampa comes out. And I'm thinking, he can't do anything. You know, he's got neck fusion surgery. Like, that's not something that you could just be like, oh, go out there and fuck around for a little bit. You know what I mean? What were you guys thinking when Ciampa came out? Did you think it was going to turn into anything in particular?
When I saw him come out, I knew what it was going to be, and I was like, well, shit, they're not going to get to finish their story, because I had watched the round table with Kofi Kingston, Johnny Gargano, and Shawn Michaels, and Gargano was talking about Ciampa like a brother, and I'm like, all right, they're already, Gargano's legit hurt, so they're talking about him in a positive light. And they're kind of moving away from the DIY thing. So I liked what we saw. It was an emotional moment. It's a fitting end, even though you kind of just forgive the fact that, you know, 3 weeks before you saw Gargano turn on Ciampa. It was a fitting end. And off the air, they did little teases to where, like, Ciampa teased throwing Candace into the boards. But
that's great. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it was a feel good moment. And again, I hope they repeat it a couple times on Sunday.
It's not a conclusion that you would have probably anticipated, but I think I read this explanation somewhere, and I think it just seems to sum it up quite well, is the fact that they'd been to war so many times and they were going to go to war this time, but Ciampa lost the war earlier than he was supposed to. And so, and that's kind of just the finality, is the fact that Ciampa no longer has the title and Gargano does have it. It didn't come through the same sort of traditional means, but that's kind of the end of it, really. It's two people that did still care about each other, and that's why kind of hated each other so much, because there was still a strong bond between the two of them, and they were still deeply rooted and connected with each other throughout their runs in NXT. But it was meant to lead to start this big blow off, obviously, but the fact that they can't, Ciampa knows that the war's lost. He knows that he's now facing an uphill battle to even get back into the ring, let alone like battle for the championship again at some point. And so I think the story that you can kind of tell is that he's come to terms with who he is and how he feels about like his relationship with like Gargano, and he doesn't want to continue the bad blood if and when he's ever going to come back. So I think this was a good way to not end it in the way that it was designed to be, but end it in a way which still gives them closure and finality and helps them progress going forward if they do want to unify them back again as DIY. And people won't bat an eyelid about it.
And midway through the show, I was looking at the new Undisputed Era t-shirt, because obviously they're my favorite thing in NXT. And I realized that the new shirt didn't have the NXT tag on it. And I looked, and it actually had the WWE Authentic Wear tag on the back. And I said, I wonder if they're getting called up on Monday or Tuesday.
It's been my theory for a while. I figured that it was a guarantee, and we're going to have to see.
You have to understand, Tony, I just don't want that. They just, I'm afraid for them. I want them to be utilized and not thrown away.
Yeah, but you gotta kind of, I don't know, ease your way into what the inevitable is.
No.
Well, we're going to see what that happens. I still think that there's a good chance that Adam Cole wins the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. I think that if that doesn't happen, there's a good chance they just pop up and attack somebody on Raw or SmackDown, or the Superstar Shakeup involves them in some capacity, but we'll know in, you know, 2 weeks, essentially. So if they're going to stick around in some capacity the next day, they're more than welcome because they've made that their home. But if they go up to the main roster, I'm sure they'll figure out something to do. And, you know, you can't keep talent down too damn far. Eventually, it'll, you know, the cream will rise to the crop, as Macho Man says. Yeah, so we ended the night with Gargano and Ciampa and Candice all posing. And that feels like some finality to me. And that's sort of feels a little bit like, even though we didn't get any kind of a future forecast for some certain things, you know, we didn't get who the next tag team title contenders are. We don't know what the fuck their plans are with Shayna Baszler and Velveteen Dream and Matt Riddle. Who knows? But we got the end of Pete Dunne's historic title reign. We got Gargano and Ciampa and all that mixed up at the end. And I'm feeling satisfied. How are you guys feeling about this takeover?
All's well that ends well, said William Shakespeare, so I guess I feel well.
It's difficult to rank with just how consistently good all takeovers are. You kind of walk away from some of them thinking that they're the best ones ever, and then on reflection you might say, oh, this is maybe not the best one ever, but it's high up there. I think this one's definitely a top five takeover of all time.
If for nothing else, that I think Johnny's moment is a legitimate, like, this could happen at WrestleMania and it would have felt appropriate, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like this was bookended starting the end of it, where the two best parts and the meat in the middle of the sandwich were things that overall were still pretty good. I mean, I will say the Fatal 4-Way was a little bit disappointing, but when that is the low point of the night, then you got a pretty damn good pay-per-view. So, two thumbs up, as far as I'm concerned. But I want to know what you guys have to say that are all listening right now. So that's where your job comes in, to leave a comment below and tell us your thoughts on these, and anything else that you want to chime in on. And when you're doing that, hit that subscribe button on YouTube and ring the bell for the notifications to be aware of when we do our next couple of things, which the next, very next thing should be the post show for WrestleMania 35.
Nope. So,
isn't it?
The next thing
doing anything for
you'll be getting is Callum and I doing a post show for Ring of Honor and New Japan's G1 Supercard.
Well, we're going to see if I have any time to edit that because my schedule is kind of crazy, but if that's possible, then stay tuned for that, everybody. But whatever is happening next, the way to be aware is to subscribe to things and follow things, including our Facebook and our Twitter at Smarkout Moment. You can check out smarkoutmoment.com because everything eventually gets funneled in some fashion through that. But there's also things that have not been on the podcast side of things. Like, for instance, we've got the Smark Madness tournament going on. We're on the finals now. So you guys get to decide, what is the better foreign object, the best foreign object of all time? Is it a table or is it a chair? It's such a stupid thing, but I love it. I've been trying to do the Worlds Collide coverage, but like nobody fucking has access and nobody knows what's going on. So
it's because there's 70 wrestling events.
Yeah, that's a problem. So I apologize that that's not as updated as it should be, but I can only do so much. And when you scour the entire internet for 2.5 hours to try to figure out what happened 5 hours earlier, and the only thing you can find is somebody taking a picture of Tyler Breeze and they say, look at this, this entrance is nice, then, you know, that's all you could really go with. But if you're going over there and you're voting on the Smart Madness tournament, you might want to also join in on the contest that we've got going on where you can win a Funko Pop. So that's on the sidebar. Check that out. You can see the little Funko Pops there hanging out, little Triple H and little Shawn Michaels. We've got the Hall of Fame coming up tomorrow night, and there's not going to be any kind of post-show or anything for that, but we're going to probably like live tweet or something and have some kind of a discussion on the Megamaniacs. So if you want to join in on that, facebook.com/group/TheMegamaniacs. And of course, WrestleMania is coming up after that, and so on and so forth. So we got lots of stuff coming your way, everybody. And if you want to help us keep the lights on and keep doing these kind of things, then hit up that Patreon and toss a little spare change our way. You could also do that through the merchandise shops on TeePublic and Redbubble. They're both at SmartCount Moment. And everything else that's happening, you'll figure it out if you just start clicking around. So the last thing I want to plug on my end is FanboysAnonymous.com. I just put up my Shazam review last night. Check that out if you want to. And whatever else is happening on that thing, you'll find by subscribing and doing the same kind of shit. So pass it over to these guys. Gonna hit you with some of the plugs. Rob?
Yes, for me, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Dude Felice. You can check out everything I've got going on at eWrestling News alongside Tony. I'm back doing the WrestleZone Daily Facebook stream, so you should definitely go over to facebook.com/WrestleZoneCom. And you can check out WrestleZone.com for your daily wrestling news. They've got just about everybody employed there at some kind of WrestleMania show. So I would suggest that they're a very good source this weekend. And most recently, I did a watch-along for WrestleMania 17. So if you want to watch a four-hour pay-per-view with me, that's up on Facebook right now. But speaking of WrestleMania 17, there is 2001 A Wrestling Odyssey. And to tell you more about that, here is Callum Wiggins.
Well, first, you can find me on Twitter at WigMeister14. 2001 A Wrestling Odyssey. We have episodes dedicated to January, February, and March, going back to the year 2001, and also a special recapping WrestleMania X7. So, with all three of us on it, so you can listen back to our thoughts from one of the greatest WrestleManias of all time before we move on to next WrestleMania on Sunday. And yeah, just check out all the weekly stuff on SmartCount Moment, including the power rankings, because I wrote those ones. So that's it from me.
Alrighty, everybody, that's going to do us in for this. Thank you all for listening, and thank you for all of your support and everything else that you guys do. It's all greatly appreciated, so thumbs up to you as well. We are going to be going into the rest of WrestleMania week, and we hope that you enjoy yourself. So for now, adios, everybody. This has been another SmartCount Moment. And we're being counted out.